Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I am really excited to tell you that I've got some comments in, so keep these comments coming. The first one is from Lisa from Australia. She says, "Hello, JBL. Firstly, I want to thank you and your lovely wife so much for all the thought and research you put into these captivating episodes. Your hard work doesn't go unnoticed. I am a busy mom with two very active young boys, so as you can imagine, I don't have much time nowadays to pick up a book, let alone finish it. But I loved reading as a youth and was so excited when I started listening to JBL, as now I can look after our boys, but also feel like I'm reading a thrilling book at the same time. The first thing I do in the morning after getting the boys dressed and flickering on the kettle is turn on JBL. Ah, what a great start to the day. It's like taking that first smell of your freshly brewed coffee." I really like that line. That's really great. "Also, you mentioned at the end of the last program to email comments about Ned's teen years. I came from a family of five children, and when I was 12, my father let me have the bungalow out the back of the house. It wasn't as flash as Ned's flat, but it was definitely a welcomed relief at times when I needed my space and peace to finish reading the latest book I was engrossed in. I was also inspired and encouraged by the way his parents analyzed their own parenting methods in relation to Ned and were humble enough to see where they may have been going wrong with him and then being resourceful in trying a different way to bring out the best in him. Our two boys are also very different, so it's inspired me to think outside of the box a bit and really aim not to quench their personality, but channel it in the right way. Please keep up the good work, and thank you again for bringing these books to life for me in my busy schedule." And so that is from Australia. So that's really good. And, you know, it's really interesting that here she has two boys, and she now realizes she's got to deal with different personalities and work with that. So that's really good. Okay, here's another one. This is from Florida. This is from Andrew in Florida. He says, "Hi, JBL. I am very much enjoying your series on T.E. Lawrence that I listened to via the podcast. On the recent episode, you mentioned about the tendency of some Oxford students to go climbing around the college. Well, if you Google the night climbers of Oxford, you will see even today this is still the case. Kind regards, Andrew." And that's from Florida. So I guess we're telling the truth on the show, so that's good.
So we'll have to do that. Have you had a chance? Probably haven't had a chance to do that yet, to Google
no,
it. No, but it looks interesting.
No, I just got that this week, and I'm going to tell everybody why we're so busy. So anyway, but no, I'm going to look at that video. Mm-hmm. So thank you for telling us about that. And everybody out there, Google that video. So I'm really curious about it. Well, with graduation approaching in a few weeks, things are very busy here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. Now, I will finish my final class for the semester after taping today's program. But that doesn't mean I'll be off for the summer. In fact, I already have begun a major task. I am writing the final volume of our very popular Bible story series on the book of Acts. Now, it's really an exciting project, and it's taking me deep into the lives and the work of God's two great apostles, Peter and Paul. I have to study the geography of the Middle East to really understand some of this, so I feel like it's right in line with this series on Hero or Lawrence of Arabia. So I'm kind of glad I'm getting to do both of these. Now, remember also, we will be getting ready during this summer for our end of summer short series on the essays of Charles Krauthammer. And then in the early fall, when we're back into classes, we will begin our series on Joseph Conrad. And in the late fall, we will beginning our fascinating series on Herman Melville's American classic, Moby Dick. If you think Hero's a long book, where do we get to Moby Dick? Anyway, we'll probably have to skip around a few chapters. So I just want everybody out there to make sure you plan to keep reading through these summer months. We will be continuing to give you fresh new programs each week, so we will not be playing a lot of repeats this summer. So anyway, over the last several programs, we have been discussing the young years of T.E. Lawrence, or Ned, as his family called him. And today, we want to continue our discussion of his success in getting assigned to one of the most important archaeological digs in the 20th century, and that was Carchemish. And he was only 19, and he was still at Oxford. So this is really an exciting program. So to help me do this, with me in the studio is my sweet wife, Deborah. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
So the 60-plus panel is back together again. James will be back sometime later in the summer. So I am amazed at how Lawrence got onto this dig. What a gutsy young man. So I don't know how you feel about this overview of this chapter. We're on the chapter Carchemish, by the way, and it is a long chapter, you know. So,
yeah, it is amazing that it just seems like he, because of his personality and his interests and his ability, he was able to get the attention of people who very important people such as David Hogarth, the archaeologist. So it's amazing that he was able to get on this dig through. And David Hogarth was 100% for him doing it. They seemed like they really hit it off together.
Oh yeah, does that remind you of anybody else you know?
Yes.
Somehow there are some of us in this world have that ability to worm our way into the life of famous people. I know in my life I've actually gotten to do a lot of things I never would have thought I could have done, but somehow I just don't have a fear of being around famous people. so I don't think Lawrence did either. So let's dig into this a little bit. And I know that let's talk just a little. Let's just talk briefly about David, old Mr. David Hogarth, and I think Corda brings some things out that we ought to talk about just a little bit. And it seems like they were two men made out of the same mold. So let me just see if I can go ahead and read this a little bit about Hogarth. And again, I keep getting these names mixed up. When I originally was writing this script out for us today, I was calling him Hogwarth.
Oh, no.
So I thought I'd better go back and really check him out. So let's just, this is page 181. I'll just read a paragraph for all of you out there listening just to keep you, up to date on who David Hogarth is. It's not Hogwarth. It's David Hogarth. He says, this is how Corda says it. He says, David Hogwarth, there I go, David Hogarth, though he seems to have a gift for remaining in the background, was one of those figures beloved in English popular fiction, the superbly well-connected Don, a scholar who was also an intrepid traveler and a man of action, an Englishman who could speak French, German, Italian, Greek, Turkish, and Arabic fluently, and who was just as at ease negotiating with foreign governments and institutions as he was with those of his own country. Though married and the father of a son, Hogarth was apparently not an enthusiast for domestic life. He was an inveterate and intrepid traveler, as well as a learned, witty, acerbic man, as much at home in high society as he was in the desert. He was a brilliant conversationalist in all his languages and respected throughout Europe as well as much of the Middle East. It comes as no surprise to learn that Hogarth and Sir Edward Grey, the British Foreign Secretary from 1905 to 1960, were at Winchester together and remained in constant touch since their school days there. So this is the man that T.E. Lawrence gets connected with, and this is the man that sees T.E. Lawrence as someone even as a young man, I mean, we're talking about a teenager, really. Let's talk about 19 years old. And he sees him as an important character. And so I think that should tell us that T.E. Lawrence was really a very special kind of a kid. So.
Yes, he certainly did seem to be. He was only 19, and Hogarth was 45 when they met. Hogarth was an accomplished man. He was a fellow of Magdalen College. He was the author of several well-received books, and he'd taken part in archaeological expeditions in Egypt, Crete, and Asia Minor. And it goes on and on. There's a whole list of all the things he did. But he also was became the keeper of the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford. And, Lawrence was connected with him there with the museum.
Yeah, even as a young boy, he and his friend would go find these artifacts and bring them to him. He was pretty much known there at the very beginning. I think it's really interesting to be talking about archaeology. You know, here at the college, we send our students to Jerusalem, and they go over there with Dr. Mazar, and they go with the antiquities authority over there, and they've been digging in Jerusalem. And so at one point in my career, college career, I did take a 4-credit archaeology course, thinking that I might want to be an archaeologist. And, Pennsylvania, well, of course, you know, the area we were in Pennsylvania was well known that had been a seabed at one time. And so I remember with our little hammers and everything, we'd go on field trips to Bedford, Pennsylvania, and we'd dig around the strata to look for fossils and things. But that career ended really quick.
That's not as exciting as going to the Middle East. No. For archaeology, no. Yes.
No, and I think I was destined for other things anyway. So my ideas to be an archaeologist only lasted, well, for one semester, I guess. But anyway, we had a daughter that wanted to be an archaeologist for a while. So there must be in our blood somewhere. You know, maybe that's why I have this affinity for, for T.E. Lawrence. Now, so Hogarth is a famous archaeologist. But one thing that I think is interesting in this whole section is this whole idea that Hogarth was also a spy master. And so let's talk about Indiana Jones just for a minute. I mean, if we look at how famous the Indiana Jones movies were, and I think Cord even brings it out in this chapter, that T.E. Lawrence was probably one of the original figures to base that character Indiana Jones on. And if you remember that first movie, it's all mixed up with the Germans, you know, and it's World War II, and they're all trying to find these special artifacts, and the Germans are beating the Indiana Jones to it. That's exactly what this chapter is all about. And even Hogarth, because he had been to all these places like Egypt and he had been all over the Middle East, he would gather information for the British government. And so I think we could also see that he probably saw these same characteristics in Lawrence. Because here, Lawrence is a great map maker. Lawrence has these great skills. And we'll even read some sections in this chapter where, Lawrence is obviously very observant. And even when he first went into the Middle East, he would observe what the Turks were doing. And even when he's on this dig, he's observing the Turks and the Turkish army. So again, that's just this really very interesting. Here's what Korda says here in the book, and I think it's interesting. He says, perhaps inevitably, Hogarth has been treated as a kind of Edwardian equivalent of John le Carre's spy master, George Smiley, by some of Lawrence's biographers, as if he had recruited his young protege for Britain's Secret Service while Ned was still bicycling in a schoolboy's shorts over to the Hasmolean with his finds. But this is to overemphasize that side of Hogarth's life, as well as to underestimate Lawrence's lifelong aversion to moving to anybody's pace or orders but his own.
Yes. Yeah, so you can't imagine him actually being a spy doing what other people told him to do.
No.
Right, yes. Yeah.
No. But yet he did become somewhat of a spy.
Right.
You know, and he did enter the Secret Service. Korda goes on, still, Hogarth was certainly one of that informal circle of learned and adventurous men and women who passed information on to the government. In his case about the Balkans and the Near East, though he was not by any stretch of the imagination a spy master who recruited and trained undergraduates. In the days before World War I, professional spies were employed by the Continental Powers against one another, but the British, particularly in the far reaches of the Empire, relied on an informal and above all amateur web of explorers, archaeologists, adventurous businessmen, and travel writers for information. So you can see that eventually, you know, spying was going to end up with T.E. Lawrence because just of his talents and his skills. And so again, I mean, isn't that a little bit like Indiana Jones?
Yes. He just happened to be in all these areas, and so he would get information. And so if he could give that information to the British government if it, you know, that came up. So,
right.
But it seems like that's what it wasn't necessarily the reason why he was there, but
oh no.
But if he came across information, then he could use it.
Yeah, it seems to me like T.E. Lawrence was the kind of character that he would take advantage of. If they needed information, he would take an advantage of giving it to them just to help himself get more stuff.
Right.
Or to get to do more things.
Yes.
You know. So it played into his plan. And not that he was going to do what they wanted. It just played into what he wanted to do. And so it was a good way for him to keep doing what he wanted to do. So I do think that just Lawrence knew how to take advantage of situations. Even as a young boy, I think even as a teenager, you know, if he wanted to do something, you know, I think he was always looking for the opportunity or how to open that door, how to get it open. And he was a master at doing that, even as a young man. So, let me just say one more thing about Hogarth here, is that he really did encourage Lawrence, you know, about archaeology. It says, this is the bottom of page 183. It says, certainly Hogarth encouraged the young Lawrence to combine his interest in the Middle East with his passion for archaeology. And Hogarth also may have been sensitive enough to guess that Lawrence would benefit from a long period away from home and away from the pressures placed on him there by his mother. Not that Lawrence would necessarily have confided all this to Hogarth, however sympathetic a listener he was, but there was no need for him to. Hogarth, Lawrence would later write, was the only man I had never let into my confidence. He would get there naturally. So I do think there was, you know, there was great friendships. And I know that even when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, there was a few professors that really did so much for me to help me along. I did not come from a family that really necessarily supported the brothers or the men in going to college, and I did get a lot of support from my sisters, but also I got a lot of support when I finally, you know, got to the university. And there was a few of them I think saw that I had some talents that really needed to be developed, and they helped me along the way. So you know, Lawrence really did have help from probably one of the most important men in archaeology at the time. And so, to me, that's amazing. But it also reminds me of Winston Churchill and the fact that there was a destiny. You know, Churchill thought he was destined to do great things. I think Lawrence felt the same way.
So. Yes, he did. Yeah, it mentions that. Well, at least Korda mentioned it several times that it seemed like it was a natural thing. The things that he knew how to do that would lead him, you know, to greatness.
Right. So I thought we ought to do, I think that's probably enough about David Hogarth, and hopefully we're still saying that right. I still want to call him, I want to put a W in there somehow. But let's talk about Carchemish a little bit. I think we need to give people background why Carcamesh is so important. And of course, I think it's really great that Korda brings out is there was rivalry between Britain and Germany to find all these special archaeological artifacts. And so if you look at what was really going on there, is that the Carcamesh was kind of like, this was like the juggler point for this international rivalry between Germany and Britain. And this is before World War One, so this is 1911 to 1914. And again, you and I have been, of course, we've been to the British Museum, and, we've seen all these amazing artifacts from the Middle East. And, of course, remember, we've also been to East Germany at the time. Let's see, it was not East Germany then.
East Berlin.
It was East Berlin, mm-hmm. Excuse me. We went into East Berlin, and we got to see the walls of Babylon. You know, so the Germans had that part. But then if you go into the British Museum, you see all the walls of Lachish. And, with the Assyrians taking, Judah, I should say, or Jerusalem at the time of King Hezekiah. So you can see that there was this, I guess I didn't really get it until I read this book, that there was this rivalry between the two. And so you can see that there is these kind of like international tensions even before World War One, and here it's over archaeology. So Korda does talk about this, and if we just go to the middle of the page 184, I'll just read this to our listeners out there. It says, why Carchemish? I mean, that's essentially the question. Why Carchemish? It says the Hittites, of course, that's what they were after, to uncover the Hittite Empire. It says the Hittites, unlike the ancient Egyptians, were an archaeological problem of great importance to scholars because there were few excavated Hittite sites and their language remained undeciphered. The Hittites had lived in a broad crescent-shaped area of Anatolia, that was in the Ottoman Empire, and northern Syria, stretching as far south along the Mediterranean as modern Lebanon and as far to the east as the border of modern Iraq. The history of their kingdom began around 1750 BCE and came to an end about 1160 BCE, with internal strife and warfare with the Egyptians to the south and the Assyrians to the east. And so we've talked about that history even with our archaeological excavation and our display here at the college. And, we've talked about the Assyrians and their war making and how they would go out after these empires. So they collapsed the Hittite Empire. It says the Assyrians to the east, who brought about the collapse of what had once been a great empire. It says the British had great interest in the Hittites, in part because dazzling new discoveries of whole cities seemed likely to be made in the area, in contrast to what was now the patient, painstaking excavation of Egyptian tombs. So in part because here as elsewhere, rivalry between Britain and Germany played a major role. Hugo Winkler's discoveries at Bogazkoy in Anatolia in 1906-1907 had put the Hittite problem on the map. Until then, there was some doubt that the Hittites had ever existed, and now it became an urgent matter of academic prestige for the Archaeology Department of Oxford and the British Museum in London not to lag behind the University of Berlin. So here's this, attention, and that's why Carchemish became so important. But again, the thing is, we have to understand, in terms of archaeology, discovering the Hittite cities was absolutely stunning. And, it was easy to find the Egyptian cities. It was hard to find the Hittite cities. And so that's why they really went into this. So you could see why I think certainly Hogarth, but even Lawrence would even be interested in this, because it was partly patriotism, and then it was also, partly just his love for the Middle East, and the idea of gaining scientific archaeological knowledge. You could see where that would really interest a 19-year-old who was really into archaeology since he was about, 12, you know.
Right.
So you could see him really, really going after it. So anyway, I think that's, again, that's great knowledge that, you know, when you read good books, you come across good knowledge. And so it's kind of getting my interest in archaeology again. So
when we're reading about that, it just, by the pictures in my mind are Indiana Jones, you know.
That's right.
Against the Germans, you know. Those of us have seen that, the movies, you know.
Yeah,
so.
maybe for one of our programs, we'll have to bring that music in, Joshua.
Yes.
We'll get our producer giving us some music. Maybe we'll do that for a couple programs away from here. So I think it's also great that that Corder brings out that Hogarth saw Lawrence as his natural choice to go on that dig. I mean, here he had been exposed to them since he's a young boy. And then because of the work he's already doing in college, he was getting ready to write a book about the Middle East and the castles. Or at least he was going to write a his thesis on it. So it looks like we're running out of time for today's program. So we'll get it and we'll continue our discussion of Lawrence at Carchemish for the next program. So remember, for this current series of programs, we are using Michael Corder's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. There is still time for you to read this book and catch on with us. We will not be finishing this book, certainly not until probably midsummer, maybe even late summer. So you can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to JBL at pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. And you can certainly follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. Streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.